Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Cubs did their best to ruin a perfectly wonderful weekend. The weather was gorgeous. Delightful. Everything outside of Cubs baseball. In the sports world, we had some entertaining basketball games. We had you could be outside. I was grilling. We had a terrific Cinco de Mayo, even. My wife was working all night, so it was just the kids and me.
Okay.
And with everybody else going out for Mexican, we said, look, let's do it ourselves. Let's put a menu together and let's open the windows and we'll see what we can do. Just hang out. We're going to watch some games and we're going to cook some food.
Do you do the menu or your daughter do the menu? She's big into that, right?
We collaborated.
Everybody?
Everybody in and suggestions. We whiteboard stuff.
Team so. Bernstein making up the menu.
We,
nice.
We did a homemade guacamole and then we did a baked fish a la Veracruzana, which usually traditionally you'll see it the Veracruz style with a fried snapper, scored fried whole snapper.
The whole fish?
Yeah, but we did it baked.
That's the whole bass.
Yeah. And the bass-o-matic. That's great.
Terrific bass.
No, we got a glass baking, Pyrex baking dish, and
okay.
Tilapia fillets on the bottom. We made a salsa with both tomato and tomatillo and onion and garlic and threw all that glop on top of it with some sea salt.
Done a tomatillo. So that's labor intensive.
Oh, they're sticky.
Yeah, you got to do all that stuff.
Good though.
Oh,
so
really tasty.
So put the salsa on top, lots of sliced green olive, and fresh jalapeno pepper, and bake it until it gets all happy. And we had that with taco chips and tortillas and beans and rice. And I had a little El Nacimiento tequila. We got the
little
blender, just a little. Got the blender out and made drinks for the kids, fun little virgin drinks. And then we all got a donut craving, and we're thinking, all right, where are we going to go? Now there's a donut place, standard, and Dunkin' Donuts is good.
By the spot.
But I didn't want to go, and the kid's like, well, can we walk? And like, it's Saturday night.
Right,
and
dragging you around.
So I said, look, go, because Jason says 7-Eleven's got good donuts. And I said, they do?
Really?
Get out of here and have a donut.
he said 7-Eleven's got good donuts.
Are they on rollers?
Well, I said, really? And he said, yeah. He said, they're good. I said, I don't believe you. And he said, all right, we're going to set. So they go. He brings back a bunch of donuts from 7-Eleven. They were really good.
Interesting.
I was shocked.
Would you? I mean, just apple your
fritter.
Standard. Oh man, I love an apple.
Yeah,
fritter.
Their apple fritter is fantastic.
7-Eleven.
Really?
It's yes.
That's an endorsement from behind the glass. Really?
I mean, that was unprompted, weighing in here, so to speak, from the I'm Fat podcast.
There's one over by the Illinois Media School in Lombard. So once in a while, I'll pop over there, and I was like, one day, I'm like, you know what? Afternoon donut, let's go.
Yeah, let the record show the 7-Eleven apple fritter. And I don't know from where they get their donuts. Sometimes, if you actually do the research, you find out.
Falling off the truck from somewhere else.
Right, and they're all coming from the same place. Well, of course it's good. It's because I still, if you're a true Chicagoan, you understand the Heinemann's apple fritter. If you remember, it used to be the bakery inside Dominic's was called Heinemann's. To me, that is... That really is the avatar of my youth of that particular apple fritter. But so I'm always chasing that, but pretty damn good.
I know others love the old fashioned as a dunker, as the classic donut to dunk. For me, it's an apple fritter. You dunk that in the coffee Saturday morning, tearing off pieces. You get it just a little, it's like 19 seconds in the microwave. You don't want the full 20. 15 is not enough because the first 2 seconds of any microwave work, that's nonsense. You can't tell me that thing turns on in 2 seconds. It's instantly on? Really? Really? Hey. Come on. It takes at least 2 seconds for that technology, those cosmic rays, to hit the inside of the fritter and thus warm it up.
Yeah, whatever it is, it worked. Sometimes, like you say, sometimes it's just right place, right time. But now that we have the endorsement of none other, no less an authority than Rick Camp, I guess it's – and I'm not a big donut guy. It just – every once in a while, for me, it's sweet after spice. When you have all that spicy – fish, and it was all. I just was craving a little bit of sweetness.
I'm always riding the. You know, you do the savory stuff. I got to have the sweet at the end, or if I have a dessert or something like that. Now I'm looking for something salty to finish that thing off. I'm always riding.
Yeah, Terry turned me onto that the chili and ice cream, where he said if you go out for hot food, you always need to finish it off by recoating your stomach and cooling the system with ice cream.
Oh, I believe that completely. Yeah, absolutely. So count me on board that philosophy.
Generally, not a big ice cream guy either, but if I'm going out for hot sometimes or ordering in hot, you want that. It's the best reason to have kids too. Best reason to have older kids who on a Saturday night in the city you can say, yeah, go on a donut run.
Is there a way to skip the younger kid part then? Is there a way to do that? If I could just get the older kids who can run errands and mow lawns and cook food for me? There's not a way for me to do that.
The toddler part is awesome too. The what you want to skip? Babies. Because babies suck.
Seems as though that's part of the process.
Yeah.
I haven't met, my friends are all getting to the point where they're having the kids and the whatnot.
And you got
to
pretend their babies are cute. You got to pretend their babies. Babies suck.
You know what weirds
me
out
most? No one will say it, but it's, you got to get past them. If you could just accelerate the baby thing and get to the adorable toddler thing.
Can I ask, am I a bad guy? Can I ask the am I a bad guy question?
Sure, of course.
And yes.
Single guy. Well, of course I am. Of course I am. But does this in and of itself make me a worse guy? Single guy. Never married, no kids, the whole thing. And my cousins have had kids. My friends are now having kids. More friends are now getting pregnant and having more kids. I get, do you want to hold the baby? Do you want to hold the baby?
No.
Do you want to hold my baby?
No.
I have no relation to this child.
I wasn't that interested in holding my own baby.
I don't have, maybe at best I'm going to be at a christening or buy gifts for this thing.
They throw up on you.
It might even be a cute child. I look at that thing and go, I am going to either be vomited on or break it. And I am very nervous about holding
yes,
your child.
You
I don't
be.
Want to hold the baby. And it's not the baby's fault.
Right.
It's not the baby. It's me. And I wonder if I am alone in this. If I am, I'm not bad guy.
No.
I imagine Dan like using baby Jason Bernstein to prop a door open.
Well, no, if he's in like the bouncy thing, sure.
You just leave him there.
Roll him over here, put him in the thing. It just
stick a rock in front of the wheel so he can't move.
Right, yeah, put the wheel chocks in there like an airplane at the gate. No, it's not, it's just, babies don't do anything except scream and ruin your sleep and throw up on your clothes. You're absolutely right. I'd rather hold a thrashing northern pike in my hands. It's just, at least there.
You see your accomplishment right there on a hook.
Exactly. Right. Now, this is, I'm a little surprised here. This 773 says, I thought the 7-Eleven apple fritter was my little secret.
Oh, have we outed? Have we found? Have you? As a family.
312, 7-Eleven has the greatest donuts ever.
What?
I guess so. I guess maybe we stumbled onto something here. Joe in Edison Park, you're on the score.
Hey, what's happening, guys?
Hey.
Hey, you are not alone. Babies suck. but B, the reason I'm calling is about the 7-Eleven donuts.
Yeah.
I actually work for a bakery supply company that sells, like, flowers and stuff. And, the company that makes donuts and everything for 7-Eleven is a company called Tellerico Martin Baking out of Summit, Illinois.
Okay.
And they make all like the fresh bakery goods and everything for 7-Eleven. And it is actually like a really quality product. It's like a fresh baked daily. It's not like something that's just sitting in a freezer. It's actually like a fresh baked bakery donut.
Well, it sure tastes like it. Wow, that's insider stuff, Joe. Thank you. There you have it.
Wow.
It helped counterbalance the pain of Cubs baseball. Little things. It doesn't take much. A well-turned apple fritter can help counterbalance Cubs pain, although the Yadier Molina thing.
Nothing can counter that pain. Nothing can counter that
pain. What actually happened? They said hematoma, which means internal bleeding.
I don't know. I asked you because, you know, you've got a bit of a more medical knowledge than I do, to be sure. I watched it a couple of times, and I wish that I hadn't because the impact is quite jarring. And I don't want to make jokes about it. I really don't because you get to that. I don't want to make jokes about it.
He just said he doesn't want to make jokes about it.
Let's play funny noises. I mean, it's
wacky radio
horrifying.
Noises.
You brought up the Michael Barrett. We were talking about it in the break. You brought up Michael Barrett. But that was, as I recall, testicular torsion.
Or was it that like full scrotal blowout? Right.
I think it was testicular torsion, which is where you cross the lines.
Yeah, and it's incredibly serious. It's serious, and I know from an ER doctor who's proud of his ability to untwist them.
Really?
Yeah, like once a week or something, a torsion will come in.
It happens that often?
Yeah, and he. Well, I mean, if you're at a major urban ER.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Okay, fine. Sample size.
You know, and my cousin says he's particularly skilled at it.
Really?
It's one of the things he knows. Like, if he's when you got to get it right away because it cuts off blood flow.
Right.
And that's front of the line kind of triage. It's just like some guys have the magic.
There are sports injuries like that I found out through sports. Wasn't it Brian Urlacher was it compartment syndrome?
Yep.
And his calf. Dangerous yes. that gets and instantly like if you don't get it diagnosed, you lose your damn leg.
Yeah.
I mean the whole thing just goes. That's how close Michael Barrett was, and this was emergency surgery.
Great testicular injuries in sports history. The Bears' Virgil Livers, who lost one blocking a punt in the wrong place. He laid out to block a punt and then was down a soldier after that.
There's a story about a kid who went to a different high school but was friends with a bunch of folks at my high skateboarder. And you know how when Tony Hawk Pro Skater came out in, what was that, 1998, something like that, the game for 64, 98, everybody started getting back on their skateboards because it had come up a little while in the whole grunge thing in the early 90s. So you get back on the skateboards and you try doing this whole thing and you go to grind, like a rail or something, yeah. Right? I mean, you're not familiar with this, you put the middle of the board on the rail, which means your legs are split over a rail, and Ben Crane had himself an itch. I mean, these are serious serious things, and how quickly they go from oh, that's really painful and he'll be fine. Because you see the NBA all the time where I think there's a super cut of it too in NFL injuries. Like there's the old NFL injuries they do where Pete Carroll's just like walking the sidelines, oh, he's fine, he just got his, it's just all bleeped out, like coaches realizing that it's just a knee to the groin or whatever. But it gets so much worse so fast.
It hurts talking about it. And you can imagine a veteran catcher who's probably been hit there 100 times. Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, in his career, at every level of baseball, he's probably taken every single kind of dong shot possible. And that one, I mean, you knew he couldn't stand.
No, went over immediately.
He couldn't stand, and then he tried to stand, and then so you knew something horrible was going on there, and we think Michael Barrett, start thinking about this stuff, and man, you don't wish that on, well, maybe on your worst enemy, you might, you know, wish it on somebody.
Maybe, but even then, it's like, I don't know, are there other things that you could wish on him? I mean, I would go there right away.
Well, it depends how much you dislike somebody.
I suppose it depends.
This segment brought to you by Fogo to show and celebrate dad, your grad, or those closest to you with the fresh flavors of weekend Brazilian brunch, now at Fogo to show. In Chicago, Rosemont, and Naperville. All right, so I saw Avengers Infinity War.
Also, okay, that's wonderful. People need to stop texting in horrifying injuries.
This isn't a Friday.
This is too much. I don't
injuries.
Need this. Yeah. I know what we just did. I know what we just talked about it.
And yeah,
for
I know.
That, I am sorry. But please stop doing that. I'm going to have to take – I can't. This is getting gross.
Yeah, but oh, yeah, because that's the worst thing. Never be on the text screen.
It's clearly not. There are so many worse things. But I don't need to read about kids getting their braces caught in chain link fences.
A lot of love for Tallarico Martin Retail Bakery, too. Apparently, they're
resounding.
They've got a retail outlet where you can go in and get some of that stuff. And your stuff on your little riff on babies, everybody in the 515 says, we got my daughter a onesie that said, I get my looks from my daddy, but my brains from my mommy. Because my wife and I were tired of people asking us why we have such a stupid, ugly baby.
Oh, my God.
No, that didn't happen.
So mean.
Why is your baby so ugly and stupid? How do you know if a baby's stupid? Aren't all babies stupid?
How do you test that?
They're babies. Oh, that's it. Sorry. Your baby's very, very stupid.
This one also rolled itself off the couch. Well, it doesn't mean anything more stupid.
I'd like a second opinion. Well, it's ugly, too. This is the Bernstein and McKnight show. I just the bottom line for my theory today, I'm buying Cubs stock if you're selling. That's all.
I don't know. We talked about it, too, with Cub fans who have put themselves on the ledge with how much angst this whole thing has caused. I don't know if anyone's selling either. I don't know. Like, if you were literally out there on the street, Dan, trying to make that transaction, trying to sop up as much Cub stock as you could, I would bet that most fans who are as upset as they are, as have called the station, as have had problems with this team,
just letting off steam,
I don't think you'd actually get them to sell the stock. I don't think you'd actually get anybody to divest themselves of their input, their investment in this team.
Now, you know I'm not a particularly wistful or nostalgic guy, but I had a little moment as a baseball fan.
Really?
Over the weekend that I did not expect to have.
And
because it caught me by surprise, I found myself feeling an emotion that I didn't expect but had to acknowledge.
I wonder if it's the same as mine, because I fully expected to feel nostalgic, wistful, and somewhat teary-eyed over the weekend, and did.
Okay, see, I didn't. I just sort of randomed into it.
Oh, interesting.
And just kind of went, oh, and felt something that I didn't think I'd feel.
Might be two different things. We'll get to it when we get back. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Jay Jaffe is going to talk some baseball with us after the bottom of the hour. He's got thoughts on things. We can ask him about the moribund Cubs and find out how he feels. But I so happened to have the White Sox game on right at the end of the game. There's a couple outs. I was half watching.
Yeah.
Doing other things. And I hear Hawk Harrelson's voice, and he sounds so old. He sounds very frail.
Really?
And very distant now. And just kind of in between. Kind of, it's a little uncomfortable in the sound. And he's sitting with Wimpy, with Tom Pachorek. And there's two outs as Tim Anderson's coming to the plate.
Mm-hmm.
And Hawk says, with his cracking voice, he says, "Hey, Wimperoo," something to the effect of, "I know it's probably the last game you and I will ever do together." Because when you put all the factors together,
right,
probably is. And I realized, wait, you know, that's that 10-year chunk, that decade that they worked together was like the meat era of my White Sox viewership. I mean, that's, I remember the night when Frank Thomas came up and the rising of Robin Ventura and Alex Fernandez and those teams, and eventually winning the World Series. They moved on to different broadcasters. But for me, some of these formative White Sox years, like when I was in college and starting as a professional broadcaster, and the way my friends and I would talk to each other, and that was like heyday style Hawk. And I mentioned being on the golf course. Everybody, the best place to talk like vintage Hawk is on the golf course.
Oh, absolutely.
Because that's where Hawk learned to talk like Hawk, was on the golf course. But I felt bad. I actually felt like younger me said, oh, that's Hawk and Wimpy. That's the last game we were going to do together. And I legitimately felt wistful. And I really didn't think I would. It didn't even cross my mind. Like, oh, Hawk and Wimpy, whatever, flip channels, basketball. Uh-huh. And then I was actually pleased that I had the TV on, was paying attention when he said that, because it stopped me for a moment. Like, oh, wow, yeah.
So two things, two questions there. One is, you know, I've had Hawk to do, you know, work in Sox Fest and stuff like that. And he gets, because he knows this is his last season, he's even mentioned, he mentioned to me, he's mentioned a lot of broadcasts, that he gets emotional very fast. Not in like a, just really like he, if he starts onto a topic that he finds is going to make him emotional, he gets to those emotions very quickly in that sentence.
And that comes with old age.
Yeah, maybe. I would imagine it does. And I wonder if that's part of the, the voice cracking, the warbliness that you heard.
Maybe.
But I remember, you know, mine not being younger than you, I remember the first time I saw Hawk and Wimpy do a broadcast together as a fill-in for, you know, back when Hawk was with Stone, and 4, 5, 6 years ago, something like that. I want to say, I don't think I was working here at the time. I think I'd moved somewhere else, but I remember catching one, and I, like you, just kind of flipping around and flipping back and forth between a couple of games, and they're hysterical.
Well, they genuinely like each other.
They really do. And the pace of the broadcast, the back and forth, the analysis of the game that they both bring from different – I mean, they bring really different parts out of each other that you don't see brought out of, you know, the one or the other, in some other situations. They're I remember being taken aback by just how quick and funny that broadcast was because of who was on it.
I remember one of my favorite Tom Pachorek lines back in the day. It just popped into my head. There was some like hot smash to third. Guy makes a play. And apropos of little, Wimpy says, "Hey, Hawkey, you know that feeling of you realize that guys hit the ball and it's coming right to you and you got to make the play?" And Hawk goes, "Yep." And there's this pause. And Wimpy goes, "I hated that feeling." You're a Major League Baseball player.
You know who he reminds me of? You know, he actually
the fact that a Major League Baseball player would say that, like, oh, that dread that you like, got to make a play.
That's right? Exactly how I feel when I hear the update bed kind of panning up in the background, by the way. It's like, holy God.
I'm once more into the breach.
Yep. Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Those two are just, they're hysterical. They're absolutely hysterical. Danny, you were talking about Tom Pachorek and his realization that a liner was coming right at him and hating that feeling, knowing that it was, oh God, it's me.
Right. I'm on here. Let's go.
Have you read, Dirk Hayhurst doesn't do, I think, a lot of the broadcasting anymore. He was part of the Blue Jays broadcast for a little while. He's in the radio booth, and I think he still does some of it.
I think he was doing PR for like a healthcare company.
Yeah, I think he's moved out of baseball work, but he wrote a couple of really good books, The Bullpen Gospels, I believe is his first one. And
we've had him on as a guest. He's tremendous.
He's absolutely fantastic, and he's so good in relating that. I don't know that fear is necessarily the right word, but anxiety to a certain point, or maybe it is. You know, at some points, fear for big league ballplayers, for guys who do this for a living, to realize that it's me. You know, you talk about players that, you know, they can do it until you put the second deck on the ballpark, until you get up to that big level with all the eyes and all the cameras and stuff. It reminds me a little bit the way Tom Pachorek talks about baseball and the way he'll let you in when you're talking with him about what it is to be at that level and succeed and fail at that level. It reminded me of Dirk Hayhurst, who was the first guy, you know, in the era of baseball that I was watching growing up, just a long reliever, a guy who made it out of just long levers and a little bit of lucky velocity and some decent feel for the baseball to get to the big leagues.
One of the few major league players who probably wasn't the best athlete
absolutely
in his town.
I mean, that's
up.
Like the first page of his book. It's like, I suck. I am not athletic at all, and I don't know how this happened to me. It's a great read. Look into it if you want, but it kind of reminded me of Tom Pachorek. And you mentioned that you got somewhat nostalgic about baseball and didn't see it coming. I did see it coming for me, and I know that the build up to this, to the anniversary of Kerry Wood's 20 strikeout game was
a lot.
Was something. It was, we built it up, everybody built it up, the Cubs built it up, baseball built it up, the broadcast, the whole thing. And that's fine. It's a historic occurrence, something that came out of nowhere. But I was pulled in. I logged on to Facebook for the one time in the week because I try and keep it to just the once.
Because you're 62 years old.
Yeah, apparently. And somebody had retweeted or shared the Cubs produced video of it, just the retrospective, looking back at it, talking to Chip and talking to Kerry and broadcasters who were there, the whole thing, talking to Pat Hughes, all the stuff. And Kerry sits down and looks through the game. And I got a lot more nostalgic than I thought I would. I think the performance itself.
Okay.
I think the performance itself. I think part of it, though.
But nostalgia has to do with where you were or what was going on. It's more about you.
Yeah.
Where you were, what it meant to you then, or what it reminds you of.
So then I think part of the nostalgia then probably attached itself to that team that almost happened in 2003. Because, you know, Kerry pitched, and that 98 team was a good one. But I think even as a 13-year-old, You knew what was going to happen there. You knew the end of that story. But the 03 team, and I think what Kerry did for that team, what the promise always was, that SI cover, right? You know, I mean, that all of that stuff kind of came back. But more so, it was just about the dominance watching that game. And maybe that's not nostalgia at all. But looking back through that era of baseball, seeing him work through a lineup that was damn good.
I thought you were going in a different direction because I thought it was going to be a recognition of the disappointment of his career.
I think to a degree.
Because that was like, holy crap, this could be one of the greatest pitchers that's ever walked the face of the earth.
But I think some of it we have to remember, you know, you see these great talents come through in these great moments. Like, more often than not, that guy turns into Kerry Wood and not Max Scherzer.
And not LeBron James.
That guy turns into Kerry Wood and not Clayton Kershaw. You know, I mean, that's mm-hmm. baseball. It's Herb Score is baseball. It's not Bob Feller. Right. You know what I'm talking about?
Phil Umber throwing a perfect game.
The guys that fall apart are the guys that make up your nostalgic moments of baseball. It's not, to a large degree, the Hall of Fame. It's not Koufax. He's a big part of it, but it's everything else around that one tentpole that holds up your baseball memories that really brings you there emotionally.
This segment brought to you by Fogo de Chão. Celebrate dad, your grad, or those closest to you with the fresh flavors of weekend Brazilian brunch now at Fogo de Chão in Chicago, Rosemont and Naperville. Real quick, Chip and Burbank, you're on the Score.
Good morning, guys.
Chip.
You know, listening to the conversation and especially watching the Cubs this season, it dawned on me, what is the real benefit of a hitting coach?
Minimal. I think that my theory simply has always been, Chip, that if you took every MLB hitting coach and randomly redistributed them to different teams around the league, the net effect would be zero. A couple guys get better. A couple guys get worse. Everybody else would stay the same. Most of these guys are their own hitting coaches. And it's sort of like, it's like swing coaches in golf. It's sometimes you find a guy that works for you, but team-wide approaches, stuff like that, I really don't think there's a ton of differential. This was the Rudy Jaramillo argument. This was that one Cubs offseason where the magic of the hiring of Rudy Jaramillo,
right.
And I did everything I could do to debunk this, saying it doesn't really mean anything. Hitting coaches, for better or for worse, some guys, what they are is they're a deflector shield to be fired before you fire the manager. But most hitting coaches are replacement level.
Yeah, Rudy Jaramillo did not bring with him 1993's Juan Gonzalez.
Correct.
Or 98's Juan Gonzalez, for that matter. That would have been helpful, too.
Doesn't happen that way.
Now, I'm with you on hitting coaches, and I think more so it's an understanding that if you were to bring in, whether it's Chili Davis or anybody, and that hitting coach were to drastically rework every hitter on the club in his own image, you know, remake all of these hitters, the
Charlie
successful
Lau.
Ones and the bad ones, and just completely redo everything. And hope that the talent itself, the hand eye, all of the athleticism, all that stuff carries over, you would ruin baseball teams. And what it is, more so than anything else, it's just a maintenance position.
Or psychologist.
I think that's a lot of it too. Maintenance from a physical and a mental standpoint. And I can't devalue the importance of the gig, because for every guy that just is his own hitting coach, whether that's Rizzo or whomever, you're gonna have stories where a hitting coach gets to somebody. And that guy makes a difference.
That's how guys get jobs. Because
that's how guys keep jobs.
Because those stories get around.
Or reputations,
the
at
league.
Least, yeah.
Jay Jaffe knows a lot about baseball, and he's going to tell us much of what he knows next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Highlight courtesy Fox Sports West. And right now it is time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on The Score. This hour's keyword is yo-yo. Text yo-yo to 72881 by the end of the hour. Keyword is yo-yo, 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. Jay Jaffe is on Twitter at @J_Jaffe. The senior writer at Fangraphs joins the Bernstein and McKnight show right now. Jay, hello, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
We're good. That moment for Albert Pujols was one a long time coming. Everybody had their chance to write their various think pieces, and with some back and forth going, how much should this just be celebrated outside of the context of his contract and the aging curve and all that we know, or can we talk about all of it and about what it means and about how modern baseball understands and values long and great careers, maybe too much when it comes to money sometimes?
Well, you know, I think it is all part of a fascinating conversation, and I'm always in favor of a more honest reckoning. I think that the fact that Albert Pujols got there at all is incredibly impressive, and the numbers, so the fact that he has joined the company of Willie Mays and Hank Aaron and Alex Rodriguez is just the fourth person to do to get 3,000 hits with 600 or more home runs, I think speaks for itself. As to the rarity of this and as to the quality of the hitter. But yes, at the same time, there is an uncomfortable reckoning with regards to how far Pujols has fallen as a player and what his current status is and what his contract means, and that's germane to the discussion of what we've seen in baseball really over the last few years. I mean, there's a lot more wariness to signing players of his age to mega deals like that.
So Albert Pujols gets 3,000, and he's still signed for a few years. But Ichiro Suzuki has gone up into the front office or wherever he feels like going, I guess. Is there a real good way, any reliable way, to take his accomplishments over in Japan before he got to Major League Baseball and figure what might have been had he started, had that talent been here?
Well, I mean, we can take estimates, and there are people who can run a projection system and kind of retrofit something. I think it's still, I'd rather just, the fact that Ichiro got to 3,000 hits with as late a start as he did, I think again speaks to the uniqueness of his accomplishment. I think the fact that he totaled, more than 4,000 hits, more than the 4,256 hits that Pete Rose got, speaks to the way that he became a superstar on two continents. You can't equate those directly because Japanese baseball is different and not quite the caliber of Major League Baseball. But I think, to me, I'd rather just let it stand alone and understand the context of, wow, this guy did this, and we're never going to see anybody do it quite like that again.
There's a tweet from Buster Olney earlier today, and he said, with about a fifth of the season in the books, Mike Trout is currently on pace to reach these numbers. 138 runs, 114 driven in, 57 homers, 105 extra base hits, 200 hits, 138 walks, and 29 steals. Now, I generally eschew the on-pace game, but not when it's Mike Trout, not when the body of work is such that we can't rule out any of this stuff. Currently, with a weighted on base average of 415, a weighted runs created plus of 170, or this is for his career, I should say. Career numbers, 415 and 170 for his career in weighted runs created plus. And I ask you this because you're the authority on such things. At 57.9 Fangraphs wins above replacement, if Mike Trout were to disappear from the face of the earth right now, if Thanos snaps his fingers and he's one of those who disappears, Hall of Fame right away, first ballot?
Well, the fact that he hasn't played 10 years in the major leagues would require a decision by the Hall of Fame and by the Writers Association, I guess, to honor him nonetheless. In the event, God forbid, it was something tragic, I think it would be easy to envision something like that happening. And if Trout were to retire because of something more mundane, just like a knee injury or something like that, or whatever, that I could still see it happening. But that takes an extra step. What's interesting to me is that I use the baseball reference wins above replacement in my Hall of Fame calculations, right. My Jaws system. I have Trout already at the fifth best peak among center fielders. That's a seven-year peak. His best seven seasons worth of WAR, and wow, he has not even completed seven full seasons. He's got six full seasons and change, wow, with this season looking like it's going to fit somewhere within the context of the previous six, so he could rise to fourth best in that category, and he's already given himself a Jaws that's nearly the equivalent of the average Hall of Fame center fielder. So by that standard, I mean, he's doing enough that he should be recognized, and I think even if he were to become a fairly average player from here on out, there would be a very strong case to induct him based on the body of work he's already put together.
Jay Jaffe, senior writer at Fangraphs, joining the Bernstein and McKnight show here on a Monday where we're looking at Hall of Fame chances for a couple of different players. I hope that we are not in a situation, Thanos or no, where Clayton Kershaw may be done for a little bit of time, a lot of time. I mean, you hear biceps sort of stuff and you really start to worry, at least I did. In a terrible nightmare, I wondered, what if that is it for Clayton Kershaw? He's not able to rebound. Where do his peaks put him around the likes of a Zach Greinke and Verlander and even CC Sabathia? I'm thinking of active guys who have probably great shots right now.
Yeah, I don't know that any of those other guys has quite as good a shot as Kershaw does. I mean, the fact that he's got three Cy Youngs, sets him apart. There's never been a three-time Cy Young winner outside the Hall, except for Roger Clemens, whose exclusion I think we understand has nothing to do with his performance and everything to do with allegations related to performance-enhancing drugs. Kershaw, his seven-year peak. Is roughly the equivalent of the average Hall of Fame starter. I have him very close to that. He's still below the average starter, Hall of Fame starter, you know, because of the shortness of his career. But he has gotten he's in his 11th season now. He's gotten the minimum 10 in. I think he would probably be elected on a first ballot, even with the relatively low wins total. He's basically, it's a very Koufax-like career, minus the postseason brilliance, of course. I think people understand the context of what he's done, elite level that he's done it at. He would probably be recognized even if he were to never throw another pitch again. I certainly hope that's not the case, and that this is, an injury that he can get past. But boy, this is the third year in a row he's gone to the disabled list with something that is going to cost him a significant chunk of action, I think.
I mentioned when the show started, I'm a buyer of Cubs stock if someone is selling the 2018 Cubs at the moment, because they haven't been very good at baseball and they're still above water. They're 3.5 games out in the division. One way to look at this is they're just sort of this moribund team again. And I think, yeah, okay, but the overall talent level and my expectations for the remainder of this long season lead me to believe there's some different ways you can get to 90 wins and they're going to do it. Am I smart to be a buyer of 2018 Cubs stock?
I would, I'm still optimistic for their chances, even in a division that looks much improved because the Pirates have rebounded and the Brewers are strong again. they're what, 5 games above 500 despite the fact that Anthony Rizzo hasn't hit, Wilson Contreras hasn't hit, that Addison Russell hasn't hit. And that Yu Darvish has been, pretty bad. I think that I can't see any of those players persisting at the current levels that they're at, and getting regular playing time at the very least. I mean, maybe if they're hurt, that's one thing. And they miss time, that's certainly possible. But playing a whole season at this level of mediocrity, I don't see that as likely given their track records.
The AL East is a fascinating division, even in its last place team, the Baltimore Orioles. Buck Showalter and Dan Duquette, both of them are, I believe, have the last year of their contract in 2019, and yet they've got a lot of big decisions to make about this club, none the least of which are trading Manny Machado, which they should have done a while ago. How do the Orioles as an organization figure out what this crossroads needs to look like?
When we figure out what this Orioles organization figures out, I'll let you know, because they are, one of the quirkier organizations in the game. Peter Angelos has always been very resistant to marching to the same beat as the other owners. You can go all the way back to the 94 players strike for that. Nobody's going to tell him what to do. I mean, in the past, we've seen, the Orioles haven't traded other players who have been approaching free agency, you know, to their detriment. So I don't think it's a given that Machado will be traded, but I, you know, I do think it's it should be, you know, an inevitability given their slow start, because I don't see them picking this up, and the AL East certainly doesn't lack for contenders right now. Not just the Yankees, the Red Sox, but also the Blue Jays are playing pretty good ball. You know, and the Rays can't be overlooked either, even though they're not really contenders. The Orioles are just going to, you know, the beatings will continue until morale improves. But they don't have the pitching, and that's just, you know, it's been a disaster. I joked the other day that Matt Harvey would be the fourth best Orioles starter based on ERA. With a seven, and he's carrying a seven. So, you know, it's just Chris Tillman's been terrible, and Alex Cobb, who got that late signing, you know, with the weird winter of free agency, has been even worse. And just, you know, they just have not been able to invest in quality starting pitching for quite some time, and it shows.
Jay, always fun to talk. Thanks for the time, man.
All right, sure thing. Thanks, guys.
That is Jay Jaffe, senior writer at FanGraphs.
It's getting ugly in Baltimore.
You're enjoying it way too much. I don't know.
It's
why Baltimore Schadenfreude is for you.
Fascinating to me.
He's
so good.
I know.
And they're so bad.
All right, we have to get to the midway. We're going to do that. I have the kind of story I love. Thanks to everybody for sending it to me, and it will hit the air next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.